So this is Jasmine Temblador. I am the interviewer, and I'm meeting today with Paula Crisostomo, who is a narrator. We're meeting today at Paula's home in South Pasadena. The date is Friday, March 15th, 2019. So just a brief scope of the interview. I'll be asking you about your experience in relation to the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference over time, talking about topics of leadership, of cultural transmission, and of traditions within the conference that have contributed to its sustainability over time. The interview is being conducted as part of Goucher's College Masters of Arts in Cultural Sustainability and the capstone project that I'm working on. So myself, the interviewer, and the narrator, Paula, have known each other for 3 years through the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. And so at this moment, what I'm going to do is I'd like to ask you, Paula, to state for the recording that you're aware of and consent to being recorded.
Okay, I'm aware of and I consent to being recorded.
Great. So first of all, I just want to thank you for the opportunity today to be able to sit down with you and talk about the conference and your experience. Let's go ahead and begin.
Sure.
So can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up and a little bit about your family?
You've heard this so many times before. I'm from a family of 8 children. I grew up in Ramona Gardens Public Housing, the housing project, in Boyle Heights, Lincoln Heights. I'm the oldest female child, so I was assistant mother. My father was a janitor. My mother was a stay-at-home mom and was really involved in community activities. And as I grew older, by 10, 11, 12 years old, she would enlist my help in organizing various little events for the parents and the families. And I think that's where I started to learn the value of community, the value of volunteerism, and just how to organize.
So what were some of these events that you were helping to organize?
Talent shows, little Christmas parties, stuff like that.
And what was
Halloween parties.
What was your reaction to, being a part of these events?
I remember first being very shy because some of it entailed going door to door to promote the event itself and inviting people over. And I was a shy kid, but my mother would come with me and she would take a turn, knock on a door and introduce herself and say why we're there. And I would listen. And then when we went to the next door, she said, okay, it's your turn. You heard what I said. Now you do the same thing. And so I would do it. And that would be the same on the phone. She would solicit donations. I remember particularly for Christmas parties, she would try and get free toys. There was Mattel Toys was located here in Southern California somewhere. They may still be here. I don't know. And she would always call them. She would call them and ask for toys, or she would call a large company or a department store and ask for toys and tell them who she was and blah, blah, blah. And then she would have like a script of sorts for me, dial the next number and say, okay, you do it. And again, I was very shy, but I did it because she would be there egging me up. You can do it. You can do it. Encouraging me. And when I started to get, sure, okay, where do we send it? That's when I got really, oh, wow, I could do this,
So amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was. And then to see it all come together, after, several weeks of making phone calls and my mother sending letters because there was no email or anything like that. And helping my mother, address the envelopes and stamp them and stuff like that.
Were you the only one of your siblings working with your mom?
I think I was. I was known as, besides being the assistant mother, I was also the most bookwormy, Instead of going out to play, I wanted to stay home and read and do homework and read my books. So I was around while everyone else was, running the streets, I guess.
So what is your relationship to CYLC?
Wow. It's a long one. I was invited in 1967. I was invited by Sal Castro, encouraged to fill out some paperwork to go to this weekend conference on the beach. Now, I'm from a very strict family, and I was, like I said, I was very shy, and my world was very small. I knew I wasn't going to be able to go. But he encouraged me. By that time, he knew my mother, because my mother was active, and she went to all the meetings and stuff. And he encouraged her, too, and told her how much I would get out of it, and blah, blah, blah. So my mother signed the form and let me go, and it was eye-opening to me. I had never been, at the time, it was sponsored by the Los Angeles County Human Relations Board. So it took students from all over the county, and there were students coming from places that I had never heard of. And, you know, they might as well have said, yeah, I go to high school in Jupiter. That's how, you know, eye-opening it was for me. My world was very, very small. So exposing me to not only, you know, different people, different kids my age who were good students and bookwormy like me from all over the place really lifted my self-esteem and confidence, I'm sure, at that time. Because I was always teased as being the bookworm and all, you know, being shy and quiet. But here was a whole bunch of other kids who were just like me. I'm not that weird after all. You know? And then to be able to meet college students, because the model was the same, high school students, college students, teachers. Then it was mostly all teachers who were like professional staff and facilitators. And then the whatever speakers they brought in. To meet them and to hear from them and to realize that they were giving of their time just to spend an hour or two with us was, again, really encouraging and just really lifted my self-esteem. And I think that was most of it. So a stronger belief in myself as a person, as a student, and as someone who could make a difference, because that's what I kept hearing all along. Is that you have this personal power. You know, that was like the message. You have this personal power, not only to, you know, do something better for yourself, but for your family and your community. So that's what empowered me.
Wow. And you serve on the board right now?
I serve on the board right now. So that was, I started, my first time was as a high school student in 1967. I know that the Human Relations Board ran it from 10 to 12 years, and then the Human Relations Board was dissolved for lack of money, and then it went on hiatus. It was then called the Mexican American Youth Leadership Conference. It went on hiatus for probably another 10 years. A group of us, all, who, including Sal Castro and a lot of them, a lot of the group wanted to get together to restart it because we all realized how much we got from it. It's one of those things there, you don't realize how valuable it is until you're apart from it and looking back and saying, hey, I learned that there. Oh, wow, that's what they meant when they said this, you know? So we started meeting every week to try and put it together. And I think it was during, some at the same time, for the 20th anniversary of the walkouts. It's around then. So we raised a lot of money to put it together. And we brought it all together again. All of us grown up. you know, we begged, borrowed, and stole from everyone we knew. We wrote a couple of grants, got a couple of small grants, raised a lot of money through an HBO concert at the Biltmore, and we restaged it. And we had it going for, I don't know, a little bit more than 5 years, I'm sure.
When you all came together to, I know you used the word revive, mm-hmm. to revive the conference and commemorate the 20th anniversary, mm-hmm. Was it a different structure to the conference, or was it very much modeled?
It was very much modeled as the same way. Yeah, the model still worked. Yeah. Yeah. The topics that we talked about or that we chose to present were different because it was a different generation and issues were different. And we also changed the name because it started as the Mexican-American Youth Leadership and changed it to Chicano Youth Leadership.
And so the name change was also because of the different issues or the time.
Yes, correct. People were living in. Right. Yeah.
And how did that conversation start about changing the name?
I don't remember. And I'm sure it wasn't like a long, drawn-out conversation. It was just sort of, well, of course we're going to change it. You know? That sort of thing. Everyone just kind of assumed it was now going to be called the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. And, of course, over time, there was questioning about should it be the Latino Youth Leadership Conference? Should it be the Chicano / Latino Youth Leadership Conference? And I'm sure there's some of should it be the Latinx Youth Leadership Conference? And some of the discussion around that, because there has been some discussion around that over years, especially with Sal, is that it was Mexicans are still the largest Latino demographic here in Los Angeles, here in the U.S. And they're still the largest demographic who are failing academically. So that was the reason for keeping it that way. And of course, we accept other Latinos, but our focus should still be on who needs it the most. Okay?
So you mentioned in our pre-interview, and I quote, you said, "The true beauty of the conference is that it has gone on hiatuses, but it always comes back."
It always comes back.
Can you elaborate more on what you think?
The thing that wouldn't leave, huh? It's the folks who are involved in it. They won't, you know, we can't let it die. But it's because it's that important. I get emotional as you know. I benefited personally. My children have benefited. And so we know we're just a few of the folks who really have benefited from this conference, from that weekend miracle. So why would it need to continue? It should be replicated. You know, I mean, so with the numbers that we've gotten from that independent study, from, you know, everyone we talk to, who has attended the difference in their lives, talk about the quality of the impact, quality of lives we've touched. This should be replicated, you know? So I think that's why. It goes on hiatus, but it always finds a way to come back. It's just like the cream always rises to the top. It's that important. And Hess Kramer has always been wonderful to us.
That's beautiful. So the conference has been sustained on the back of volunteers for all of its life, for 50 plus years.
Yeah.
Why has it been important to have an all volunteer based conference?
It's important first of all, because labor is always the most expensive budget item. Also because I think it's nice for the students, it's important for the high school students and the college students who are involved to know that all of these people have given up their weekends, no matter what, you know, what is going on in their lives. You know, we leave our family. Some people give up work, some, you know, whatever. Or just to stay home and watch football. But to know that you guys are more important than whatever it was that was going on in our lives, that we come and share our time with you. I think that was important. And I think that was important for me, too, when I was a high school student. And again, to realize, like, what? You know?
So, in thinking about how the conference has changed over time, I'm sure that there's been a couple of changes. And as you mentioned already, different eras, different times, different issues happening. Have there been any changes in the structure or content of the program?
Yeah. The career fair was an addition. Adding more music to it, but that was part of trying to add more to the cultural content. The fashion show is something different. And so those are mostly the biggest changes that I see.
How do you feel about those changes? Like, why have those changes been added or made?
Well, there's always group consensus. Yes, you know, we're a very democratic group. And it's been for various reasons. We saw that for the musical stuff, we realized that maybe we were hitting them too hard with academic issues or other stuff, and they needed some lightening up, I guess. And to use music as a cultural base was a good idea. The other stuff, I think the career fair, that was Charlotte, took that on because she was hearing from, this is my understanding or my memory, she may tell you differently, that, of course, our students need to know what they can do once they graduate from college, or they need to know if college is not for you, because we know college is not for everyone. Maybe you can look into these kind of careers. And I know that some board members were kind of questioning that. So that was the reason for the career. And it was also a way to involve other professionals, working people. And the addition, that was another cultural thing, was the addition of an art sort of thing, art exhibit.
That was nice. So in thinking about traditions, are there traditions of the conference that have continued since the very beginning of the conference?
The dances.
Say a little more.
Well, they're, you know, a bunch of high school students. They wanted to get together and network and dance and stuff. So, and it was also, I remember when I was really deep in the weeds and planning, it was like, oh my God, how are we going to get them tired? They're going to be excited the first night. How are we going to get them tired out enough? So it was doing the dance. The morning wake up with the music, that was a big thing with Sal, especially in the beginning. That's continued. The Sunday morning prayer thing, that's continued. And that's important to keep too, because a lot of parents do look at that. And a lot of the students too, I understand that. But basically, you know, I see it as just kind of typical conference model. You know, you have a keynote speaker. You get to break out in groups and talk about it and then come back and say.
The dialogue that happens with the students. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The morning wake-up.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The morning wake-up. Why is that important?
Well, to get the students out of bed early enough to get the place, to get this conference started. And it's always really early in the morning, I know. And that was to make sure that they would realize that, oh my God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. We better fall asleep because they're going to be playing that loud ass music at 5:30. So that sort of thing. But also, again, it was Sal used it as a way to introduce them to the kind of music that their parents probably played on the weekend that not necessarily they would play themselves. And I know that some of the comments we got back, or we would be told by the end, that they never listened to that music before because it reminded them of their parents, but now they really appreciate it. So that was really nice. Can we be excused so I can blow my nose?
Okay, so has the conference remained true to Sal Castro's vision over the years?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me a little bit more.
And you may have heard the story too. When Sal was homesick, he sat Charlotte down and said, "This is what's going to happen." And he planned it out. Exactly who he wanted on the board and what he wanted them to do. And the gist of the conference was, I think we've stumbled a little with some speakers, but we can't find, you never know what people are going to say when they get up to the mic, unfortunately. And if they're volunteers, it's even harder. And if you're asking them to drive 2 hours from home, all of that. But in trying to identify other folks, and I think we've done okay. I mean, I wish we could find another Sal Castro. Did you ever hear him speak?
I did not. Okay. Only in Charlotte's recordings shared at the conference.
Oh.
Or the recordings online.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He gave his best at the conferences, but yeah.
So how would you describe Sal Castro's vision for the conference?
Wow, that's a big one. His vision was huge. And it was multi-pronged. And it was to instill pride in the students' heritage, their cultural and historical legacy, and to do that by teaching them more about it as much as we could in the short time that we have with them, which is why it's hard to find a speaker who can do all of that, to make them feel proud of themselves and their families and their communities, to make sure they believe they can go to college and graduate, to make sure they know that once they do that, they owe it to themselves and their communities to come back to the community, to give back however way they can. And it's like, do A, B, C, D, repeat. A, B, C, D, repeat. So it becomes this cycle sort of thing.
A circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about Hess Kramer, Camp Hess Kramer. I remember in the conference, Rita always says that Hess Kramer is a very special place. So what contributes, in your experience, what contributes to the power of this place?
I think the distance from the communities that we're from and the beauty of the site that we're in, and to know that these people have welcomed us have encouraged us to come back so often. It's like everyone who's a volunteer, what does that mean? The students may not realize that, but for staff, we all realize that. That's huge. Because the place is gorgeous. It's a free weekend on the coast. So everything that it has stood for, you know.
The location, the place, being somewhere different.
Everything, yeah. Beautiful. And I'm still devastated by its loss. I cried out loud. Like right now.
And take a couple minutes.
Specifically, in my room, I need a big leather chair and a recliner and my own refrigerator, and it would be there. It's amazing. No, yeah. No questions asked. Oh, okay. You know,
you've always worked well together.
Staff there. Very accommodating all the time. You know, I don't know what your experience has been, but I know when I was working closely with all of the different staffs, they've been. Yeah, and even after, you know, after the fire loss, the director John texted Myrna and said, "We'll be back, but in the meanwhile, you might want to call these different places, you know, because it's important that you guys keep doing what you're doing." So it's like they understand the importance of sustaining what we're doing. So
that's amazing. And there might even be some crossover there too, because they're also working with youth.
Yep. Right. Yep.
Seems like there's a great relationship there and understanding.
Yeah.
And
absolutely
appreciation for the work that everyone is doing.
Mm-hmm. That all helps, you know.
Supporters.
Allies.
So, what do you believe are the important ingredients that make up CYLC?
Oh my God. The staff, absolutely. Especially the facilitators, because they're the ones who spend the most time with our high school students. Because no matter what's going on, the end of the day, and I hate that cliche, is what's important is the experience that the high school student gets from what we're providing. And it's the facilitators who are really creating that experience with them one-on-one. You know, we do the macro stuff, the big picture, important stuff, you know. But it's the facilitators who do the hands-on, you know. And that's why I think when I spoke to you early, it's like I wish we could do more for the facilitators.
They're doing a lot of heavy lifting.
They're all of it. Yeah. Yep.
And helping to shape the minds of
students. Uh-huh. So their training is really, their training and their commitment and their passion about this is really, really crucial. Really crucial. And I know that even though we don't spend time with them and help them navigate college, that they're still getting inspired and motivated by what they're hearing and by working with the students, you know, just tangentially.
There's it's like that knowledge is being transmitted to both the students and the facilitators.
And the facilitators. And, you know, they might need it up, notched up a level, but they're able to do that themselves, you know?
So, has your role within the conference changed over time? How many different hats have you worn?
Wow. My role has changed a lot. I know at one point it was my house that was where we kept all the boxes and did all the planning, and this was pre-computer stuff and trying. I remember Hugo and I sitting at the dining room table and having the list of students that we had just gotten from the schools, because it was all mailed to us, and I was going to the P.O. box to get all the mail and the applications. And then, okay, we have our list of 100 students. How are we going to break them up into 10 different groups? You know, and okay, let's check 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3. All the ones are in one group. All the twos are in another group. That sort of thing. So doing a lot of just the everyday hands-on stuff, in the logistical stuff, to now being a lot more macro sort of stuff. And it's been really interesting. And I guess that's a natural progression. That's a natural progression, yeah.
Do you feel like that's also a part of the conference of everyone who participates, is that they start, you know, in a certain, they're facilitator. And
yeah.
And they can be in a different position.
Yeah, I think you need to learn or be around it before you can really understand how it goes and why it goes and how it can get better, you know? You can't step into something and assume that we're going to make it this way now because I know it'll be better. You know, maybe it was tried that way. Maybe it won't work with this group, you know. So, yeah, I think there's a progression of volunteerism that needs to happen.
So what are the common reasons that you think or that you've heard that keep volunteers coming back to CYLC?
Common. The students, that they know they're making a difference with the students. When you look at the larger picture on the outside, what the students are hearing, and to, again, be told over and over again by grown-ups who look just like you, who made it through, that everything's going to be okay. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be okay. That's important. I think those are the reasons. Those are the reasons I'm told by colleagues and friends who have come back to either to be speakers or the career fair or whatever. That's why they'll come back.
Have you ever spoken with the facilitator or student that's come back and they've shared with you their reason of coming back to the conference?
Yeah. You know, and what's nice to hear is that I get more out of this than they do. Because, again, I know the facilitators are getting inspired. Yeah. And I know that when I was working in higher education, part of it was keeping me going, was keeping me grounded and making me realize, okay, this is why you're going through hell Monday through Friday. This is why you're going to go to that next board meeting and raise hell for students of color. So it was motivating for, you know, a lot of the professionals too, you know, and again, on another level and tangentially, but it's the high school students where you see they're so eager and they're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and they're just so needing to hear that everything's going to be okay. And if you ever, you know, I haven't had a lot of opportunity, unfortunately, to speak one-on-one with high school students. They, since the walkout movie, you know, they think I'm sort of some celebrity. And so, you know, they get kind of, whoa, there she is. And they don't really want to approach me. Or if I approach them, they get really shy. So, and you know, I have to respect that, and I don't want to push them and stuff. But I understand. But I'd like to.
With time.
With time, maybe, huh? But then I'll get older, and they won't say, who's this old lady?
We'll keep screening the movie Walkout. So, you mentioned speakers and the professionals that come to the conference. What significance would you say that they have in the conference? Why is it important for professionals and speakers that are Chicanos and Chicanas to come to the conference?
Okay, it's really important for the students to see people who looked like them, who went to their high schools, who suffered with their same issues, who are now successful and successful enough to be invited back, and I'm standing in front of all of you, and you should be listening to me. And also, we have found some great speakers, Robin especially, who has her, that used to be called gender issues, if you might remember. And we used to have a UCLA professor do for the boys and then a female for the girls. But there was some friction or it didn't quite mesh
You know, we struggled with it for a while. Robin struggled with it for a while. But, you know, Robin has just this, she's an entertainer to begin with. She loves being on stage. And that's good. But she just has this incredible story. And she knows how to deliver it. And she worked, you know, how she was going to present it was, took her a little while. You know, and I love how she finally came up with oppression. Because for a while she was billing it as, here's the how to have a healthy relationship. Because that was the issue then with all of the sexual assault stuff going on. But how she frames it as oppression is, has really, really hit home a lot more. So did I answer your question? I know. Yes. I went all around it.
Thank you. So what would you say in your own words and your experiences, the purpose of CYLC for you?
The same as Al Castro's. That's what I would say. It's the same as Al Castro's, just to make these students believe in themselves, to let them know they're very much loved and expected to do well. We have to let them know that we have high expectations of them. And we know they'll reach.
Are there any favorite stories that you have of your experience with the conference? Anything memorable?
Oh, I don't know if I should say any of them.
And when you feel comfortable sharing.
I know that. No, I don't. None that I can tell you one day. None that I want to live on in history, but I'll tell you offline.
What does it feel, well, how does it feel to be at the conference as an adult, you know, as a not as a participant, mm-hmm. but as, you know, behind the scenes now, you know? And do you ever reflect back on or remember how it felt for you as a student?
The first part of your question, it's cool, you know, to be sort of looking back and I try not to be overly critical because that's so easy to do. Well, I'm sitting down having my cup of coffee and looking at you guys running around and doing all the work. And, oh, they should do it this way. Or they should do it that way. And how come they did it that way? But look, you guys have walkie-talkies and you have golf carts. We didn't. You have cell phones. We did. We were running all over the place. So yeah, it's cool. It's nice. Sometimes I feel guilty. Sometimes I do feel guilty that I'm not doing enough, that I'm just taking up space and, you know, being this historical icon, you know, and I know how to do this. I could do that. I could do the best. But again, it's about developing leadership for you guys too. And I was, one of my very early mentors told me that a good leader knows when it's time for them to step aside and let new leadership develop. And so I remembered that. And I thought that's pretty good. That's a good reason to sit here and get another cup of coffee. And what was your second question?
Do you ever reflect back and just remember how it felt for you as a student?
Oh, I do. Especially when I speak. After the walkout movie, I really do try and remember that. It's Friday night, the students have just gotten there, and I try to remember what was it like on my Friday night, you know? And that's what I try and speak to, not necessarily about the walkout, but this is what you're going to see, this is who you're going to hear, and this is why it's important to be here.
And what a grounding moment for the first day.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. To set it up, because again, they don't know what they got themselves into and why, you know, my boyfriend's mad at me because I'm here and I was supposed to go to the football game or this dance with my girlfriends, but I'm here. My cousin's quinceañera, I'm missing it because I'm here, you know.
In thinking about, you know, setting the stage for the students, they experience a lot of different workshops throughout the weekend. so many different topics, but what would you say in your experience, when is that aha moment that happens? The moment where it just clicks.
Saturday afternoon.
And what workshop do you think that is?
I don't think it's necessarily a certain workshop. I think it's just a cumulative effect. Cumulative effect. It's usually Saturday afternoon.
I've heard sometimes it might be the at the bonfire.
Maybe.
The campfire.
Yeah. I think that might be a little too late, actually. Yeah. Yeah, but that's the bonfire is a real bonding experience, and that's important too.
Yeah. So day two of the conference, it just starts to manifest for people.
I think so. Has that been your experience?
So what has your participation in the conference meant for you over time?
Wow. What has it meant? It's always been very important. And again, when I was working, it was big grounding for me and letting me know why I was doing what I was doing at Occidental College, because that was always a struggle to be a woman of color, you know, in a managerial white ivory tower. But it was also important for me to let the students know that we're there. And I think my continuity kind of surprises people. You know, when I come and I say, I was first here in 1967 and I'm still here, believe it or not. You know? And they say, wow. You know, and then that I'm not. It's not because I don't have anything better to do. It's because I really believe in this. So that continuity has, I think, inspired students. I hope has helped to teach students and everyone else how important it is.
And I think it's not every day where the students of today get to see someone that they can relate to, that looks like them.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That is a person that created change with other people.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
But
I'm all that in a bag of chips. Yeah,
all that in a bag of chips. but I can see that, you know, that it is important for them.
Yeah.
To see.
I understand that. Yeah. I just
and the continuity. Is important. So another question. So when you're observing the conference and attending the different workshops, from your perspective, what do you see going on? Like, what's going on in the workshops? What's going on with students?
I like to try and see the facial expressions of students.
What are some of the expressions you're noticing?
Most of them are very interested, wide-eyed, like some in disbelief. A lot of them are hearing a lot of the stuff for the first time. That's what I like to see most of, not only this, but the facilitators too, especially if they're first-time facilitators. Like, how are they receiving this? I like to see their, not only facial expressions, but body language too.
And so what are you thinking to yourself when you're seeing all these expressions?
I'm trying to key in and say, oh, they like that. Okay, that's an important topic. Wow, oh, I didn't think that joke was that good. You know, whatever it is that I'm seeing people react to.
Observing.
And then, yeah, and then because, you know, the four of us, or sometimes five or six, depending on how many of us are there, we will always get together and meet, and that's the sort of stuff we'll share.
And so what's the key? What's the key? What above all else defines CYLC that makes it special? What's the key that makes it special?
as corny as it sounds, I think it's just the love that they feel, that we all feel the entire weekend. You know, the togetherness, the unity, the knowledge that it's safe, because we try, and I remember that was very intentional, to make this a very safe space. You can be whoever you are and say whatever you believe, and know that it's not going anywhere, you know.
So in thinking about leadership, we talked a little bit about leadership in your pre-interview, about people saying that you're a leader and your reaction to being a leader. But how do you describe leadership?
Oh, wow. I don't know.
What are some examples of leadership?
I think realizing or seeing an issue or a problem that affects you or your family or your community, and doing whatever you can to solve it, make it better. And for me, it was being all in, you know, because as a high school student, I could have walked away many, many, many times. But when I realized that it was this important, and again, we weren't asking for anything crazy. We were asking for better education. Isn't that something we were supposed to be asking for? So, yeah, realizing how important it is and maybe how broad-ranging it is, you know?
So why has building leadership been an important part of the conference? It's called the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. Mm-hmm. Why has that been important?
Because we want them to be change agents, and because part of the purpose is so that they will come back to the community and do what they can
to contribute.
To contribute back. Yeah. And to be a leader.
And how do you see leadership being modeled at the conference?
I think that facilitators, staff, and board members and other volunteers are all, we're all seen as being in leadership positions there at the conference. And again, it's the experience and the eyes, through the eyes of the high school students, that's utmost important. It has to be at all times. It's what we know will work to develop these young leaders and to inspire them.
Let me move on to the... towards the end of the interview. So when you think about the present, what are some of the issues that you see today that are impacting the students who are coming to the conference?
Oh, absolutely. The immigration issue. You know, that was something that we never had to deal with. As second generation Mexican Americans, we never had to deal with that. So absolutely, the immigration issue, and if it's not happening inside their home, it's happening on their street, in their school, people around them, and that is very stressful. And given all of that climate, it's also playing out in school, as we see all the time, you know, with other students.
And how, I know that there's been some additions of the scholarship section about support for DACA students, so there's been some additions in the conference to be able to support with those issues. So are there traditions of organizing that are passed down within the conference?
Traditions of organizing. What do you mean?
So we talk about the blowouts very early on in the history of students coming together and organizing at the conference and then coming back out into the community and continuing that. How do you see that coming through in the conference?
Well, I think with showing the moving and having me speak and then having me there all weekend helps with that. But I think it's repeated in different ways and in almost every strand that we go through.
the importance of giving back and being a leader in solving the myriad of issues that our communities and those families face. I hope we're doing that. I don't know. Again, I'm just sitting back drinking a cup of coffee while you guys are doing all the work.
And writing notes. So what do you believe is the reason why an event like CYLC that happened a half century ago still has a continuing resonance today?
Because unfortunately, it's still needed. It's sad, but true, after all of this time. But of course, demographics change, you know, we come and go. It's still needed. And there's a lesson in that.
We still have to remain vigilant and continue to fight. That's part of leadership, too.
There's different issues coming with every generation, and some that have remained.
Yeah, yeah. Or some that have gotten better and then are coming back. I mean, this whole affirmative action with them. Oh, my God. Yeah.
So in thinking about cultural sustainability within the conference, sustainability at the conference, when you think about the future, how do you see the legacy of the conference continuing?
That's a big one. I don't know. Because, you know, first thing that comes to mind, of course, is economics. And we're good with the school board, but we don't know for how much longer. But there's also, again, the need and the folks who have always been there. If we have to go on hiatus again, maybe in 5 years, you and your cohort will sit down and say, how can we bring this back?
And call you.
That's what I... Thanks, I'll be in a nursing home by then.
Well, in your experience, it's clear to me that the conference has been a source of empowerment. It's been a source of helping people connect with their identity and their culture, their heritage. And also about connecting to equitable access to education. What is your view on that? Do you believe that that's very much as well true?
No, that's very much as well true. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Educational justice is still necessary, and cultural identity and pride is still necessary for all of our high school students and continues to be. And if that's our job, that's our job. We accept it.
So why is the sustainability of CYLC important for the future generations?
Because it's still necessary. Because although we're getting great, great numbers, we're still only doing 100, 200 students at a time.
Right.
I personally don't think we can do any more than that a year as volunteers. But we could probably do, if it can be replicated once a month, it would help. We would see a much more empowered group of youth coming out. Mm-hmm. But if we can only reach 200 a year, that's the tip of the iceberg. That's just barely scratching the surface.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of great work that still continues and will continue.
Yeah, and I'd like to, unfortunately, other school districts haven't replicated it or other,
You think there could be an opportunity for collaboration in the future?
Sure.
Well, we reached the end of our interview, and I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. And the final thing is, I just want to ask you to state for the recording, if you grant me permission, to use the recording of the interview to write a reflection paper for the Capstone Project.
Yes, you can use this recording, Jasmine, to write your reflection paper.
Thank you so much, Paula.
You're very welcome.